Ahoy there. Ahoy there, listener. I know what you're thinking. He's going to spin me another story about why Martin can't present the show this week. And I don't want to disappoint you. Martin isn't here. But very excitingly, we now have it copper-plated. We now have it double-padlocked. Beginning to sound like Boris Johnson making a speech. We've got it confirmed, is what I'm trying to say, that Martin is going to be here. There is going to be a new episode of Time Ghost at the beginning of March. Are you sure? I heard you say. I thought Martin was probably going to have another problem with his gates. Well, no, fear not. Even though a Roman bathhouse, brackets brothel, was found underneath the site of the gates, common sense has prevailed, and Martin got a last-minute injunction with the council, and thankfully a bulldozer is going in there this weekend and taking it all out, and none of it has to be kept for the local museum. So that's a really, really great result, I think. Really pleased for him. Absolutely fantastic. He can just use that as rubble, really. He can use that to fill in. I mean, I don't know if he wants to build himself a sauna or something, you know, close to the house. Perhaps a pizza oven. He could just use all that, you know, that mosaic and everything. He could just use that as landfill, which is great. So anyway, that's brilliant. I'm just going to fill in for one last time with what I think is a rather corking episode, actually, from the Time Ghost Archives. So pin back your luggles and enjoy this perennial treat. Here we go. A classic from the Time Ghost Archive, the last classic before we have a brand new episode at the beginning of March. Crosses both fingers. Enjoy.
Ahoy there. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Time Ghost. I'm Martin Bain-Jones.
I'm Craig Children.
You're Craig Children. I just left a little pause there in case you wanted to dive in and...
I thought you'd just gone mental. Yeah, but no, you're right. You were teeing it up for
There was
me,
method to my mentalness.
Well, yeah, anyway, welcome back. Hope you're enjoying the podcasts.
Come on, get out with it. Let's get it out. You, I believe, because you came in with that, little knowing look on your face.
I do,
which
I have a
little
knowing
look. Which is the one you wear when you've got a red-hot taboo.
I know, we haven't done this for a while.
We haven't, no.
But I'd like to start by exploding a taboo.
Blow it up now.
Here it is. I'm just going to step up to the plate and take a swing. You know, I don't care whose nose I'm putting out a joint. I don't care whether the ball stays in the park or goes right up over the boundary wall.
Over the stands.
Over the stands. Here it is. Method acting.
Yes.
Is shit. Actually.
Yes. Sorry, that wasn't a silence of... you know, of the world being torn in half, or, you know, the veil of the temple being rent in twain.
No.
That was me just thinking, was that it?
No, it's topical, Martin.
Yes, well, it is topical.
It's topical because of what's happened on Spooks.
Of course, either you're thinking about the waterboarding, I believe.
The story is, of course, Richard Armitage was waterboarded.
And he insisted on doing it properly.
Yes, that's right, yeah. It's a
form
of torture,
For 4 seconds, Martin. I seem to remember.
It's actually 7 seconds, I think.
7 seconds. I know an actor who once rode a pig naked for about 3 minutes for a sitcom.
Was it called Beast?
Might have been.
Yeah.
Anyway, he rode...
Can you remember his name?
I forget now. I think he was awfully good. Can't remember now, but anyway...
Look a bit like Quentin Tarantino.
Or Wayne Rooney, perhaps.
No.
Anyway,
so he was waterboarded, and as you say, for only 7 seconds. At which point, you know, this has been headline news. One feels a little cheated. One thinks, is this simply a publicity stunt?
One maybe has to go to the BBC iPlayer and look at that episode of Spooks, and maybe it might all have been worth it. That one man's pain.
I think it's very interesting. This whole. Debate that occurs from time to time about method acting. And here,
yes.
Perhaps I didn't express my taboo clearly enough. My taboo is, I don't mean it's just shit. I mean, it doesn't actually exist. That's what I mean.
Yes.
I don't think there is such a thing as method acting.
No, I think it's the last retreat, the last resort of a deadly earnest person who seems to think that by earnestness they shall achieve. You know, I think, you know, very famously, wasn't it Gielgud who just said, why don't you just act? To someone like Dustin Hoffman, I believe it was.
I believe it was actually Laurence Olivier in Marathon Man.
Oh, right, well, there you go.
Because Dustin Hoffman, who was obviously playing the eponymous sporty hero,
right.
Was going off and sort of running around Central Park. When in scenes where he had to appear out of breath, he'd go off and run a marathon and then come into the room and everyone would have to sit there waiting while he went off and ran around Central Park. He'd come in absolutely exhausted. And after this had been going on for a couple of days, that's what Laurence Olivier says. Said, why don't you just act, dear boy? In other words, save us all a lot of bother.
Save us all a lot of bother and stop being so damn earnest.
Because I think it
God,
just...
how tedious.
But I think, you know, if you think of the famous examples of method acting, what would they be? What would be in your top...
Well, I'll tell you what.
Top three method acting stories.
Well, any film, famously, any film by Mike Lee, of course. Mike makes everyone live their characters for about 3 months before he starts filming.
I did hear a brilliant story about that, actually. It was a friend of a friend who's in a Mike Lee film and said that one of the actors on the film, well, at the initial cast discussion, says... Well, you know, they were rehearsing, obviously, in London. He said, well, I've decided my character lives in Brighton. And they said, really? He said, yeah, so I'm just going to go off and live in Brighton. And he just took the money, just lived in Brighton for the entire rehearsal process.
And, in fact, for the entire filming
and
process,
the entire
which
filming.
Was a shame.
Yeah.
Because he was in Brighton,
the film was actually set
in London.
He said, no, I can't come. I live in Brighton. My character lives in Brighton. I can't possibly come
to
the filming.
Sent the odd postcard.
I mean, yes. But it kind of does point up the lunacy of the whole thing. Anyway, so that's Mike Lee, number one.
OK, I'll carry on. Well, Robert De Niro, isn't he a famous sort of... Basically, I think it's people who are sort of sociopaths, people who just can't get on with their fellow man and have absolutely nil empathy with their fellow man, have therefore to sort of do this great smokescreen. Oh, God, I've thrown myself... Daniel Day-Lewis, I think you're on the cusp of mentioning earlier, of course.
But my theory would be, you see,
yes.
That I mean, I've got no proof of this whatsoever, but if you were actually to go and observe these people doing what they do, they're not method acting at all. They're not living the character at all. They're basically bullying people.
This is essentially true, yeah.
That's my theory. The problem with method acting, I think, as John Hurt famously said, is what does everyone else do?
Yes. Well, I've just thought of another method actor slash bully. Russell Crowe, famously on the set of Master and Commander, insisted for the 8 months or however long it took them to make that masterpiece.
Very good film, Master and Commander.
It was a good film. The trouble is I'm a big Patrick O'Brien fan, see, so I take the casting of Russell Crowe in the Jack Aubrey role ill. I take it ill. I take it like a slap in the face. But anyway... He appeared at the first read-through and stood up and addressed everyone in his finest...
He said stood up in a dress. I thought, God, that is incredibly method.
No, it would have been.
He stood up in a dress.
Well, I think,
he said, gentlemen, from now on, I shall be...
Called Russell.
Rossella.
Rossella.
Crowina.
Ruzil.
And I'll thank you not to make any personal comments...
Yes.
About my lovely floral... My floor outfit.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Well, no, he stood up and said, gentlemen, he said, which I think that's marvellous. I'm being ironic. He said, from now on, I won't answer to Russell or Mr. Crowe. Like that. Or Mr. Crowe.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I'll only answer to Sir, Captain or Commander.
Preferably Commander, presumably.
Yeah, and I know this. I've been told this because a friend of mine... Was there, who promptly got up after that read-through, bought his ticket home and told Peter Weir where to stuff Master and Commander and was thenceforth not in the film. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, would you be willing to be waterboarded, Martin, for a
well,
while?
Well, I mean...
Say you get a part
of I'd be curious to watch Armitage being waterboarded... And then after that, if I felt I could proceed, I wouldn't mind trying it myself, of course. I'm happy, on the other hand, perfectly happy, for the sake of drama, were I to be playing a waterboardee, and I very much hope one day to do that, perhaps in a Fringe theatre production above a pub somewhere in Camden. If I felt it would help the drama, I would be delighted to
have Richard Armitage waterboard.
Have Richard Armitage waterboard. But apart from that, I'm very happy to take people's word for it. I imagine they wouldn't use it as a method of torture if it wasn't mildly unpleasant. So I'll just take their word for it. It's probably not very nice.
I've got a friend who was in something with Richard Armitage.
Oh yes,
and it's funny to see him referred to as a method actor in this article because. Yes. I mean, he did have an intense preparation, as I recall my friend telling me, which seemed to, essentially, he was absolutely ruthless. He would set his alarm clock.
Yes.
The alarm clock would go off. He'd get in the shower.
Yes.
He'd get in the car.
Yes.
He'd drive to the set.
Yes.
He'd have some breakfast.
Yes.
And he'd start acting. I mean, that was day in, day out. I mean, whatever... I mean, there was no end of lengths to which he'd go to.
He would drive to the set. So he was playing a chauffeur, maybe?
No.
Was he playing an actor or in a film?
No, he wasn't playing an actor in a film.
Was he playing a trencherman, a man of great appetite?
He was playing a baddie in a 1930s murder mystery. It was called, I think what it was called, it was a remake... it was called Malice Aforethought.
Oh, that was brilliant. Who was in that?
I don't know.
Who's your friend? Can't remember.
Can't remember
his name.
Can't remember his name.
Oh.
Looks a bit like Rob Brydon. Martin, have you been watching on the BBC, the Electric BBC, a wonderful programme about class, which...
John Prescott.
I want to say stars John Prescott.
Yes.
I think that's what it does. I think it stars John Prescott.
And he's the host, he's the presenter, is he?
He's the presenter, he's the subject. It's quite an interesting new hybrid of programme because it purports to be, I think at least this was probably the way John Prescott had it pitched to him.
Yes.
It purports to be an investigation by John Prescott.
Yes.
Into class in Britain. And
when
really,
in fact, it's a comedy.
It's a comedy about how what a dinosaur John Prescott is. Every time he comes into shot, they put a tuba on him.
I've heard this little jaunty tuba. Yes.
It's really massively unfair. I mean, he has been...
Tubby the tuba.
Yeah, he's been well stitched up.
Tuba is the fat man's instrument, I think, isn't it? Whereas the flute would be more... If Peter Mandelson came out, a bassoon.
A bassoon, a sly bassoon.
Sly bassoon for Peter Mandelson. Oh, that's a rubbish bassoon.
Tony Blair, he might be a little sort of rattle.
No, Tony Blair, no, he's a slinky jazzy trumpet, Tony Blair. He's a trumpet in the hands of a Cuban trumpeter. With all the brass and all the jangle, the jingle and the jangle.
What would Gordon Brown be? It's like we're doing an impressions
Gordon
show, isn't it?
Brown?
It's like a weird impressions show.
It is.
But what would Gordon Brown say?
Oh, hello.
Yeah, but what would Peter Mandelson say if he met John Prescott?
Yes, well, there was a young musician's guide to the guide to politics, guide to the cabinet.
Yeah.
Gordon Brown, well, I think he's a double bass, isn't he?
Yeah.
Or is he a... No, he's not.
Oh.
Now you put it like that. I think he's a timpani, Gordon Brown.
Bow.
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 Bow. Yes.
Boom, 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 bang.
David Willetts is an Ons Martineau.
Oh, that sounds nice. What's one of those?
Ons Martineau. Oh, it was an instrument introduced by Stockhausen. I'm guessing a guy called Martineau must have invented it.
Stockhausen, the one who doesn't actually write any music.
That'll be him, yes.
Yeah.
He basically writes music that sounds
like...
And
Ons Martineau just makes no sound whatsoever.
Oh, no, it does. It has a sort of pattern of a keyboard, and it has a ring with a bit of string on it. And the ring is worn on the thumb of the person playing it. And he pulls the string up, and the sound goes... Like that was very...
A bit like a theremin.
A little bit like a theremin. It's a... It was a sort of, it was a forerunner of the synthesizer, of course.
Wow.
Yes, clever. That's right. But Stockhausen famously wrote music that, well, sounds just like things falling out of a cupboard.
Ooh.
You know. But back to the issue of class, though, because it's a massive subject. Class has been our it's been our great legacy, really. I mean, however much one might abhor the class system in Britain, I mean, one can discuss all sorts of reasons for it existing and continuing to exist. Possibly it's something to do with the size of our nation. You know, that we're a very small island. We're an island that's been invaded from every side. You know, we've had the Frenchies from the south. We've had a sort of American cultural invasion from the west, obviously. And we've had marauding bands of, you name it. We've had Vikings, we've had Goths, we've had Picts and Celts. And it's like we're some poor little starlet and Russell Brand's been at us. We've had it from all angles.
Yeah. Well, it's
possibly fascinating. I'd say some of the more filigreed points of the class debate aren't going to be brushed by the stodgy hand of Prescott. I can't imagine he's going to...
Well, it's funny, we do like presenting arguments in a dialectic, don't we? I mean, it always annoys me about, you know, newspaper headlines and television programmes work much the same way. So, for example, with John Prescott, it's, you know, the thesis and antithesis are class no longer exists, on the one hand. Does class no longer exist, on the other hand? Has class not changed for the last 100 years? And you think, it's probably somewhere between the two. I can save you all a lot of bother. Don't make the programme. It's probably somewhere between the two. That's where we're going to end up, somewhere between the two. It's like those newspaper headlines that you say, you know, I don't know. Give me any subject and I'll tell you what they would put in the newspaper headline.
OK, the subject is this.
So, say Madonna, say, for example.
OK, all right, Madonna, all right. Any subject...
Sorry.
Involving Madonna, huh?
So say they'd say Madonna colon, the Peter Pat of pop, or aged wizened hag? Question mark. That's basically the formula of every single headline.
Oh, I see. I see.
So you say David Cameron.
Sorry, I'm just going to stop there. Peter Pat. I like that. we've kept Peter. We've kept Peter as the masculine bit, and Pat's what? Surely the Petra Pan.
Petra Pan, sorry, yeah. That would have been Peter Pat.
The Peter Pat of tiny footprints. Yes, of course, but that's like
Well, Pat, it's an extra bad choice because Pat is a sort of unisex name as well. Pat could be a man. It's like I've changed it to Peter Pan, so, you know, Peter Michael or something. That doesn't make
Peter
any sense.
Mandelson.
Peter Mandelson. But anyway,
the
you know,
Peter
hill-walking.
Yes.
Hill-walking. Hill-walking, colon, a glorious taste of the outdoors or an utter waste of time? That's basically every newspaper headline that you see. Now I've mentioned it, you'll notice it.
Yes.
It'll start to get on your nerves. I promise you. I mean,
yes.
You're
culture. Method acting? Or give my regards to Broad Street.
Yes,
essentially.
Perfect.
There
perfect.
We go.
Now you get it.
There we go. I'm getting there.
Now you get it.
Basically, you're going the colour spectrum. You have to fill in here.
Yeah.
Red.
The colour spectrum.
All
the colours of the rainbow, or just too many bloody colours.
Well, our train is about to leave. The cultural train. The platform is obliterated with steam. Just the detritus of parting lovers, waving hankies. Why hankies? I've never quite understood. Were the Victorians partially sighted? I don't know. What's wrong with a simple hand?
Well, they just loved to do things properly, didn't they?
Well,
I can't wave my, you know, grubby hand out of the window. I have to wave a nice clean hanky.
Nice clean hanky. Well, it's not going to be clean for long if you wave it
on a
smutty, smutty platform. Anyway,
off we go. Off we go.
Goodbye. We're waving our stovepipe hats.
You're running alongside. Don't worry, the doors are locked. There's no way you're getting on board. We're off.
Bye. Goodbye from me, Martin Bain Jones.
And me, Craig Children.
Time Ghost was written and created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. This episode was originally released by The Times in 2008, and it was produced by John Davenport and edited by Ed Ryland. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast.